Well, hello there, TGP. It's Monday, February 28th, 2022. This is In the Know, episode 32. Handful of announcements for you. First of all, March 20th is going to be an important day for a number of reasons, and I'll tell you a couple of reasons right now. First of all, we are going to have a family meeting immediately after our morning service. So that's TGP members. And what we're going to do is what I mentioned yesterday. We're going to try to replace part of the bylaws, the guiding documents that talk about elder selection, with what's going to be in the new guiding documents, the process for that. And then at the end, after we vote on that, we're going to nominate a new elder or two new elders officially, and then ask for some prayer and some fasting and raising of any concerns or questions. Okay, so that's the first thing. We're going to have a family meeting to do those two things on March the 20th. So go ahead and put that on your calendar. We need everybody there that can possibly be there. March 20th at night, Sunday evening, is going to be our Sunday evening service at 5 p.m. That's the first 20 date in March on a Sunday, and so that's going to be our evening service. At some point at the beginning of April, I need to get the dates for sure. I think it's the first or second weekend in April. The IF Women's Gathering is going to be happening up in Dry Prong at B22 Gym. FBC Dry Prong is hosting that, and they've invited us to take part with them. So you can contact Allison Hinsgens for more information. And then on April 24th, which is the week after Easter Sunday, we're going to have a family meeting, and Lord willing, we will affirm a new elder or new elders at that meeting. We'll have a vote to do that. And that I'm looking forward to that, and I hope that you are too. Now, I just have one section of sermon recap today, and it's what I said I would do yesterday. I want to talk about the names that are given in this story for the 12 children that are born from Genesis 29:31 through chapter 30, verse 24. In the Bible and in this story, names carry lots of significance. Usually, parents name their kids in a way that accords with either A, their circumstances during or surrounding the child's birth, or B, a particular work of the Lord for them. And it's no different here. It just so happens that the names of most of these children are just unfortunate. They end up reflecting the mommy war that is going on at the time. Better yet, they end up betraying the strife within each mother's heart as she longs for what she doesn't have. So remember, just to remind you really quickly, Leah is unloved, even hated by Jacob, her husband. So while she has children, what she's after, what her heart seems to want most, is her husband's love. And for Rachel, she's the favorite wife. But her sense of insecurity and strife comes from her barrenness. It's almost as if she wonders, will Leah's children ultimately unseat her from her favored status? Some of these names are not only tragic, but they also seem to betray a misunderstanding of the Lord or ascribe to him something other than his grace. Like they come to believe that maybe like he's on their side of this war. I think it's helpful to point out also that Alan Ross contends that Leah's words seem to give evidence of a genuine faith in God as the one who gives children, whereas Rachel's words do not, at least not until Joseph is on the scene. But a lot of commentators don't believe at this point in the story, Leah may actually have genuine faith, while Rachel doesn't display that until later on, which would be like after she tries to steal the household gods from Laban, and after Jacob begins to like really lead the family and asks them to put away foreign gods. And they think it's more like that point where she actually believes exclusively in Yahweh. But that's neither here nor there. I just wanted to say, if I had to look at these and say, based on their words, who looks like they have faith, I would say Leah and not Rachel. Okay, so let's consider these names in the order of birth. You have Reuben first. Ra'ah is the Hebrew word for sea, and Ben is the Hebrew word for son. So what she's saying is look or see a son, or something very similar to that. She mashes like these two words up, and for her, it expresses the truth that God has looked on her affliction. This part of her phrase actually lines up with what the Bible said a verse earlier. You know, God saw that when God saw Leah was hated. The second half of her statement, for now my husband will love me, shows that she thinks this son is going to set everything right in her disfavored relationship with her husband. I would say perhaps she puts too much hope in that child with that second half of the phrase. And then you have Simeon. Shema is the word for hear in Hebrew. Just like Ishmael, the consonants are what matter most in Hebrew. Ishma, you hear that, the SH and the M, Shema. And you don't hear it in Simeon, but if you read it in the Hebrew, it's actually Shimeon, something like that. So it is there. We, for whatever reason, when we pronounce it, we just say it differently. Side note, here's your podcast added value. There really aren't many long vowels in the Hebrew. And off the top of my head, I can't actually think of any maybe that are pronounced the way that we say it. So like we say Abraham, but the Hebrews, like he would not have recognized his name exactly. They would say Avraham. We say Levi, but they would say Levi. Judah is even more different because it's like it actually is like a Y that starts his name. But when it came over like into, it got translated like with like a Germanic J instead of Yah. Judah's name is actually something like Yehuda. anyway, that's neither here nor there. You don't need to know all of those things. But none of that was part of what I had written here, and I got to find where I was. So the Shema, Ishmael, Shimeon, you hear that Hebrew root in all of those words. And so she basically names her son, he hears or he heard, which is very similar to Ishmael, which is God hears or heard of God. Because she said Yahweh heard, she was hated. Now, she doesn't directly mention her husband, but it's like indirectly because she has to be hated by someone. And Yahweh saw that she's hated, and the implication is by her husband. But she seems to understand this is a mercy from Yahweh based on the fact that she is hated by her husband. So these first two, one of the commentaries that I read this week said something like, you know, with the first two names, you really get this picture of Leah understands that God sees her and he hears what's happening to her, that he's involved in her life in a meaningful way. Okay, so then you have Levi or Levi, and that sounds like the word for attached. And again, it's the consonants that matter, and the same two consonants are in that root of that word. And so Leah says that... She says she names him attached, basically, in the hope that Jacob would become attached to her since she's borne him three sons. And the implication with that is I've borne three and Rachel's borne none. So maybe now he'll be attached to me, and parenthetically, instead of her. It's so tragic when you read these in succession to hear within her words her vain hope that each child she bears will somehow cause her husband to notice her. Like she really wants to be loved by her husband. Okay, then you have Judah. And here Alan Ross says, with her words, there may be some evidence of contentment and satisfaction in the Lord. She doesn't even make reference to her husband, but only to Yahweh, to God. This time I will praise Yahweh. So then you go to Bilhah, which is the concubine given by Rachel, that Dan is born to her first. Alan Ross argues that the names that Rachel gives to her sons born by Bilhah reflect not faith, but in Dan's case, the fact that she has essentially been wronged by God, or is has been wronged at some level by being barren. And number two, is competing against her sister with Naphtali in this childbirth competition. Dan's name is related to the word judge. It sounds like the word judge. You think about the name Daniel, Daniel, you know, God is judge is his name. So Rachel essentially says that God has finally rendered a judgment in my favor. He's finally looked on me and he's judged, essentially judged between me and my sister. So it's implied that the judgment that God has rendered is for Rachel and against Leah in the birth of Dan. So that's why she names him Dan. Then Naphtali, I mentioned this yesterday, but it's essentially the same word as wrestle. Like it's the same. I mean, just like different, like your and your, you know, it's the same exact sounding word, just spelled a little bit differently. But it has the same kind of meaning, whereas those two don't. But the name Naphtali is essentially the same word as wrestle. She likens this family competition to a mortal struggle and says that in this competition, she has come out on top. And then you have Gad, who's born to Zilpah, which is Leah's handmaiden. And here, Leah names her son based on her phrase, "Good fortune has come." Now, there's some speculation as to whether or not she is actually crediting fortune like as the idolatrous reality, so like the god of fortune there, or simply like almost the way that we would talk about fate, right? Like we don't talk about that in our church at all because fate is not a real like thing, as like this force that determines, you know, the course of our lives. We believe God is the one who does that, but that use of fortune as like this idolatrous reality would be this like the same as talking about capital F fate. So they don't know if she's just crediting that and actually doesn't have faith, like exclusive faith in Yahweh, or if she's just saying the way that many people sort of unthinkingly use the word luck, like it's my lucky day. Christians don't really believe in luck or fortune or fate, but we sometimes use phrases like that as a way to express that something unexpected and happy and good has transpired in our favor. Okay, and then you have Asher. Asher is a word that's related to the word happy. And she essentially says that this birth makes her happy and that women have called her happy. And one of the commentators just says basically, in other words, she's saying that women, and it's like a wink, wink, nod, nod, namely this one particular woman, should look at her with envy because of her happiness. She has Issachar. After the whole Mandrake fiasco, she has Issachar. She hires her husband for his services. And then she names the child that comes out of that basically wage, or at least a word that sounds like the word wage. I would argue that this betrays. And so her phrase, though, is because I have given my maidservant to my husband. And so like God is repaying me for that. And I would argue that that phrase that she uses betrays a misunderstanding of that, of the morality of that situation, of giving her to Jacob as a wife. She believes God has rewarded her for that act with her due wage, which is another son of her own. So the first thing I would say is God never owes us a wage. Like if I were sitting down with Leah and I were like just saying, all right, let's talk about why you named your son wage. First, God never owes us a wage, whether it comes in the form of money, glad circumstances, or children. As a matter of fact, if God did pay us our wages, the New Testament says that we get death, Romans 6:23. And then it seems like Leah does not understand the nature of what she's done in using her handmaiden as ammunition in this mommy war. She seems to miss what the narrator picks up on. It is God's grace that's at work here. Because, you know, you read that part about Issachar and it says God listened to Leah, and that's his grace at work, not Leah working. God's working on her behalf in his kindness. Then you have the name Zebulun. This word is related to the word honor. With her sixth son, she once again revives her hope that her husband will honor her now that she's born him six sons. And she says something similar after her third son, Levi. You can compare chapter 29, 34 with chapter 30, verse 20, and look at the similarity in the words that she uses. And then she has the daughter whose name is Dinah, but again, it's probably a closer pronunciation to the Hebrew to say Dinah. This is the only name given in this passage that is not explained. One particular commentator, though, mentions that with the birth of her daughter, this actually gives Leah the, quote, perfect number of children. So in Western thinking, like in our mindset, 10 is the perfect number, this like round, whole number. But in Hebrew, the Hebrew culture in that time, 7 was considered the number of perfection and completion. And then you have Joseph. Rachel finally has a child, quite apart from all of her striving and efforts at childbearing. And she names him, and the name may reflect an understanding that Yahweh is God over life. She says that Yahweh has rolled away her reproach. Now, there was a social stigma in that day related to barrenness that even Bilhah, having children on her behalf, did not and could not remove. And now she has a child of her own, and she was able to make two kind of word plays with that one name. First, Joseph, Yosef or something like that, is the same word as may he add, or almost the same word. And then Joseph is more distantly related in sound to like take away or to remove. It's like Asaph versus Yosef. So the question then is, why take this time to study the names of these children? It's because particularly in this passage, Genesis 29 and 30, the names really do tell the story. Each name represents a key word in a phrase spoken by each wife that tells of her pain, her desires, what she's thinking, what God is doing for her in his grace, and how the rivalry is progressing. These names and their meanings are essential to a full understanding of this story. They're important enough that Moses takes the time, space, and ink to explain them. Therefore, we should pay attention. So I think that's enough for today. Have a great week. I love you, people.